Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Dragoncast. Home of House of the Dragon. Gather your small council, send out your ravens and call in your bannermen. I'm Hand of the King, Jamie East, here to guide you through the insane world of Westeros and beyond.
Good morning, Westeros! Welcome to Dragoncast. I think this is like something like episode 24, not including bonus episodes. It feels like we've done a lot more. It feels like we've been around forever. I'm Jamie East, and this is...
I'm Chris Mandel. Always the bridesmaid at these things.
Thank God. You wouldn't want to be anything else, would you? Any wedding in... Was there ever a successful wedding?
Oh, that's a good question. Successful wedding.
We had... I suppose you could argue that Rob and...
Talisa.
Yeah, maybe.
Which I need to apologise for, by the way. A few weeks ago, I called her Talia.
Yeah.
Because when you called her Talisa, I thought it sounded like the girl from N-Dubs, and I thought, that can't be her name.
Female boss?
Yeah. I thought, that can't be her name, but it is. Yeah. Has there been a good, a happy wedding on Game of Thrones? I mean,
well,
Sansa
as things currently stand, House of the Dragon,
Rhaenyra and Daemon
seem pretty fucking happy.
Yeah. Sansa and Tyrion, it wasn't
unhappy. It was also unconsummated.
Yeah, true. Maybe that's the trick. Maybe the best ones
keep your hands off each other.
So today we're doing the Purple Wedding.
Why is it called the Purple Wedding?
I think it's because of the wine, and also his face goes purple when he dies.
Ah.
The episode is called The Lion and the Rose, but it is
Lion
known
and the Rose.
As the Purple Wedding by fans.
Okay. Season 4, this is our first Season 4 episode. Now,
season
with
four
a bit of controversy. Two. People not complained, but asked us if we would cover 4 episodes this season because they were so unhappy with the results of the poll.
Oh no.
You guys chose, just underline that in red pen, you guys chose episode 2, which we're covering today, episode 8, which was Watchers on the Wall, which is the big fight in the Red Keep. No, big fight. Where is it? Is it the...
It's the Castle Black.
Is it the fucking Castle Black in it? Yeah. And the one where Ygritte and Oliver meet each other. And then episode 9, which was... fucking hell. Which episode is that?
Viper and the Mountain.
Oh, the Viper and that. Yeah. Which, is, I mean, I'm looking forward... I am looking forward to all of those. But people were cross that we weren't covering the finale. Episode 10, Children.
Well, I put this to you. Do we think there's a case to be made to do 4 episodes of season 4? I certainly think there is.
There could be. What, just 2 for season 5?
Season 7 might be a 1 episode. I'm open to it.
Yeah, let's ask. We'll ask the
listeners. Your people can speak to my people and we'll see how that's going to look.
I don't see why not. I
mean, also, you know, the episodes that we're covering are great. And there's a feeling of like, oh, we're not even getting into... all the amazing things that happened.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, I'll tell you what, let's get into this episode. Before we do that, if you want a quick recap, this will take 5 minutes or so. Our sister podcast previously on has all of the episodes of Game of Thrones in short, bite-sized kind of recappy formats. In fact, if you've never looked at it, go on it. We don't really update it much anymore because Dragoncast was born and there was no real need for it, but we have... we cover Game of Thrones. I think there's every episode of Stranger Things. I think there's Succession there. There's a Big Little Lies is there. There's also, oh my God, there's maybe there's Peaky Blinders too, I think.
A lot.
There's a lot there. There's a lot of episodes there. It's really helpful if you're kind of dipping in and out or if you've got a friend that wants to kind of start a series and, you know, point them towards that. It's very helpful. Anyway, here we go. Here's previously on with The Lion and the Rose.
Roose Bolton arrives at the Dreadfords, the ancestral castle of House Bolton, where Ramsay is holding Theon with his new wife Walder, one of Walder Frey's granddaughters. Ramsay's torture broke Theon's spirit so much he's now Ramsay's servant and has been renamed Reek. Roose scolds Ramsay for castrating Theon, as Roose planned to trade him to the Greyjoys in exchange for an important fortification, Moat Cailin. To demonstrate his control over Theon, Ramsay gives him a razor, and Theon obediently shaves him, despite Ramsay revealing that Roose killed Robb Stark. Theon confesses he didn't kill Bran and Rickon after all, so Roose orders Locke to find and kill them, suspecting they may have joined Jon Snow at Castle Black. He also commands Ramsay and Theon to retake Moat Cailin, suggesting that he will legitimise Ramsay as his true son if he succeeds. In King's Landing, Jaime feels weakened by the loss of his right hand and worries that people will learn he can't fight as well with his left, so Tyrion gets Bronn to teach Jaime to fight Southpaw. Varys tells Tyrion he was seen meeting Shae and that the news will soon reach Tywin. Cersei proves his point. At their wedding breakfast, Margaery's father, Mace Tyrell, gives them a golden wedding cup, which Joffrey receives pretty graciously by his standards. Tyrion gives them a copy of The Lives of Four Kings, a book about the Targaryen dynasty that is considered essential reading for all rulers. Joffrey's less enthused by this gift. Finally, Tywin gives his grandson the second of the two Valyrian steel swords he had made from ice, Ned Stark's sword. Joffrey's delighted and uses the sword to cut Tyrion's gift in half, naming the blade Widow's Wail. Tyrion tries unsuccessfully to convince Shae to leave for her own safety. Realising he must hurt her feelings to save her life, he lies to her, saying he could never really love a whore. Bronn is asked to take a heartbroken Shae to a Pentos-bound ship. On the beach at Dragonstone, Melisandre burns three people at the stake as a sacrifice. One of the men is Axel Florent, Stannis' brother-in-law. Axel begs his sister, Stannis' wife Selyse, to spare him, but she's such a devout follower of the Lord of the Light, she ignores him. At dinner that night, Stannis and Selyse argue about their daughter Shireen, whose face is scarred by Greyscale. Greyscale not only disfigures its sufferers, it's almost always fatal, but Shireen is the only known survivor of the disease. Selyse believes her daughter's ailment was a punishment from the Lord of the Light for being stubborn and wants to beat her. Stannis refuses to let this happen, but allows Melisandre to visit her. Beyond the wall, Bran wargs into his direwolf summer and kills a doe. After Mira wakes him, Jojen warns Bran that it's dangerous to spend too much time inside the animals, as he risks forgetting what it's like to be human. They stop at a weirwood, and Bran has a vision of the three-eyed raven, as well as images of the Red Keep covered in snow, his fall at Winterfell, and dragons flying over Westeros. A voice tells Bran to look for me beneath the tree, north. Back in King's Landing, Joffrey and Margaery are finally married. At the wedding celebrations, Bronn confirms to Tyrion that Shae boarded the ship to Pentos and advises Tyrion to drown his sorrows. Elena gives Sansa her condolences for the deaths of Catelyn and Robb, saying it's especially awful to murder someone at a wedding. Elsewhere, tensions also run high, particularly between Cersei and Brienne, and also Oberyn, regarding his sister's rape and murder, noting that Cersei's daughter Marcella currently resides in his hometown of Dorne. Joffrey is in full Machiavellian prat mode and announces a play about the War of the Five Kings, with the rulers played by dwarves. Sansa's upset by their depiction of Robb's murder, and Loras leaves in anger at the homophobic portrayal of Renly. Tyrion then insults Joffrey and the king demands his uncle act as his cupbearer. Sansa hands Tyrion Joffrey's golden cup and he pours some wine. As Joffrey eats the traditional wedding pie, he downs the wine and begins to choke. Jaime and Cersei run to Joffrey's side as he collapses and vomits. As Joffrey convulses, the fool Ser Dontos approaches Sansa and tells her to follow him if she wants to live. In news that will upset hardly anyone, Joffrey dies in his mother's arms, and Cersei commands the King's Guard to arrest Tyrion for Joffrey's murder.
Welcome back, Dragoncast, with me, Jaime East, and Chris Mandel. Okay, episode 2 of season 4, Lion and Rose. This was, I remember this was only the second episode that I was host of Thronecast for.
Right.
So it felt like a real big one to get my teeth into. I'm going to kind of like say that one of the downsides of doing the rewatch in the way that we're doing it, which is, you know, a few episodes here and there, is that, for instance, like, this is only like the second episode we've covered that's had anything Joffrey in it. Yeah. And I remember him being such a huge, you know, he's obviously such a huge part of that era of Thrones that, you know, if you class it into chapters, I guess this is kind of chapter 2. And he was like, he was omnipresent throughout the whole thing. And, you know, people were so overjoyed to see him meet such a grisly end. But watching it this way, I was like, oh, I feel like I barely know the guy. They condensed a lot of Joffrey into a short space of time, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's got, I think if we were to watch it all, he gets demonstrably worse. And I think we've sort of missed that. Like, I think there's this feeling I had of him, like, just being a little shit. But he's not. He's actually quite a threat to quite a lot of people.
Yeah,
and I think the marriage to Margaery, for example, that is something that I think if we were watching all of it, we would see that that is a real problem for the Tyrells. You know, we know what Joffrey's capable of. We've missed the episode in season 3 where he kills Roz, the prostitute, with a crossbow.
Yes.
You know, exactly, they try, they think,
which is really sad because she was
it's
great.
It's awful, but they think that Joffrey's sort of temperament is because he's not getting laid. So they give him Roz to sort of try and calm him down, and he just tortures her. And it was a bit like when
that woman that slept with David Beckham wanked off a pig in the farm.
His Rebecca Lewes moment. That's
Rebecca
right.
Rebecca Lewes. Yeah. That was it.
It's yeah, he is a monster, and I think we've maybe not quite seen that as much.
No. Yeah, you have to kind of keep reminding yourself. And it's the same with Ramsay a bit as well.
I think you're right. I think Ewan Rheon is a great actor. I think what he does with the character throughout the next 3 seasons, I just don't think it works. It's
okay.
He does a sort of like, it's a bit Jack Sparrow for me, like a little bit like, ooh, I'm going to just roll my eyes, and he's a bit of a clown. And I think like,
I mean, he was great in Battle of the Bastards was good.
Was
a good episode for him.
I just think like,
but even then, I guess you're right. You know, there was the bit where he killed Rickon. Where it was a bit like,
Yeah, it's all a bit foppish and a bit like, ooh. I don't think it works. And I think like, I remember reading interviews with him around the time that he was getting.
He's a lovely guy.
Yeah, yeah. He said, look, it's really important that he's not Joffrey. Like, you can't just do Joffrey. But what I think is interesting is Joffrey kind of dies and Ramsay takes center stage. There's this passing of the torch. And Ramsay, like, my understanding is that he is, like, Joffrey's quite unpredictable and he's quite violent, but he doesn't really torture people. He chops people's heads off. Ramsay keeps you alive and, like, removes fingers, takes layers of your skin off.
Yeah.
He's, like, a sick freak. And I think, like, in the show, like this sort of period is all about like the war has kind of ruined like modern society for these people. Like no one's behaving with any candor. Like everyone is unhinged and reckless and destructive. And you know, in season 3, which we didn't watch a lot of, Jaime sees like the Riverlands are just absolutely fucked. Like everyone's just getting raped, torched. There's famine. There's poverty. There's disease. And I think, like, Ramsay being like, the new villain is really, like, reflective of this new status quo, right? He's, like, an actual monster who hunts women. But I do think, in order for that to work on telly, I think he needs to be a little bit scarier. And I think the way that he's doing it, which is a bit like Heath Ledger as the Joker, like, it's just a little crazy. And that isn't really very easy to kind of follow.
If you have if you have to show that you're unhinged on screen, it makes you less unhinged, doesn't it?
Yeah, I just don't think when he talks to Roos in this episode about Theon, and he's like, "What have you done to him?" And he's like, "Ooh, I removed a few bits and pieces."
Yeah,
it's just like
it's a little bit wing to the camera, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's like we know that he's chopped his dick off, right? Like that's the it's. I feel like I think what I'm trying to say is he's telling a lot to the audience rather than to other characters. Like,
yeah.
Remember? Like, he's kind of winking at them. I think generally yeah. I find Ramsay quite annoying.
Who was the best villain then in Game of Thrones? Who didn't do any of that? And who was just outright grim? I think maybe Craster?
Well, I think Tywin is probably the best because I would say Joffrey is a really good character because what he has that Ramsay doesn't is that he has relationships with lots of people. Like Joffrey with Cersei is very different than Joffrey with Tywin, Joffrey with Tyrion, Sansa. That is what
it was more layered, wasn't it? Because you always saw Joffrey's cowardice.
More three-dimensional. Whereas Ramsay has like his father, Theon, and then like Sansa, but he's sort of the same to all of them, and so you don't really get any kind of like texture to it, I think. But I think Tywin is the best villain as much that he thinks he's not a villain, so he's kind of like everything he does is being done for the right reasons. But then I think you could maybe say Littlefinger. He's an amazing villain.
Littlefinger, I think he was great. Although towards the latter seasons, also fell into moustache twiddling a little bit.
Because his thing is always zigging while everyone else zags. And I think at some point on the show, they're like, it's not going to make any sense, but Littlefinger's going to do the opposite of what you think he would do because he has to. And you're like, okay, calm the fuck down. And maybe another one then on that point, Varys. Varys was always backing his own horse. Yeah. And he did that with a lot of commitment. And I thought, Conleth Hill did an amazing job. Kind of, he was always acting in his best interests, and sometimes that aligned with other people's.
Did I tell you Conleth, he shouted at me once? Did I tell you this?
What? No.
And interviewed him on that. In a kind of okay way, but there was a glimmer of something going on there. He was cross about something I'd said on Thronecast about the character, about Varys, where I said something like, Varys doesn't really know what he wants. Oh. And he actually pulled me up on it on the red carpet. I was interviewing him for Thronecast, and he pulled me up on it. It was just like, because he's got a really good, really nice Scottish brogue. And he's like, I'm not going to do the accent, but he was
Is
like,
Is he Scottish?
Yeah, he's Scottish, yeah.
Oh, God, I thought he was Irish.
Big, luscious full head of hair as well.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, and it just looks weird. It looks like a wig. It looks like he's wearing, you know what I mean? It looks like he's wearing a toupee, but it's not. It's his actual hair.
So what did he say?
And he just pulled me up and he was like, I saw what you said about me. I was like, about you? And he's like, well, about Varys. And I was like, okay, what did I say? And he was just like, oh, you said that Varys doesn't really know what side he's on or what he wants. You're damn wrong. I was like, okay, fine, all right.
Wow.
You know, he was laughing while he said it, but still, to remember that.
Yeah. Well, the most interesting thing about the actor that plays Varys that I read was, obviously, he dies in
He's got a penis in real life. He's not a real eunuch.
Just to get into character, he castrated himself just to see what that would be like. No, he dies in like the second to last episode of Game of Thrones, right?
That's right, yeah.
Like at the start, like Daenerys tortures him for betraying her. And obviously he's there till almost the very end of Game of Thrones. There was a story or like an interview with him in Entertainment Weekly when it came out. And he was absolutely devastated.
Yeah,
and furious.
There's a video.
There's a video. I'm not saying it's wrong to say that. Like, I think your relationship to the character is your own, and it's not our job to sort of like.
He clearly loved Varys very much.
But I think. I think also just not getting to the end. I think was something that he said in that interview that was incredibly hard to take. And I think that's fascinating. I just think we see the performance, but we don't see the way they live in these roles and the way that it's a constant in their life for a decade. And I would say if you get to the final season, well done. And that still felt like something had been taken away from him, which I think is fascinating.
Well, I think there's a lot of things, isn't there? You know, from the very brief moments that I saw of behind the scenes and with the crew and stuff, they were a family. You know, it's like you work for 9 months of the year with people in all sorts of horrific kind of like locations and night shoots and all the rest of it. You grow close. There's no end of that.
Yeah.
So even just to like, he probably missed out on like the rap part, you know, that being on
set
for the last scene, or you know, for what was the last scene around, presumably the, you know, where the Bran the Builder was announced and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
it's Bran the Storyteller, rather.
And
you know, I guess even on a just purely on a personal level, you'd want to be there for the tears and the party and the hugs and the presents, and you don't want to kind of feel as if. I guess he was a principal character, so you want to feel like part of the gang, right?
Yeah.
You know? I would have felt exactly the same. And it was a bit of a throwaway death as well, wasn't it?
Well, I think the last scene being a night shoot with CGI with one other person, I think I'd be like, sorry, what do you mean you've only got like the skeleton staff on set today?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's my last fucking day. I've been here
since...
Where's
my gold watch? Yeah.
Yeah. So I think very interesting anyway.
But there's a great video of the script reading.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, there's a video of it, I think, where he sees it and he, I think it's, that's interesting because I think it's the script reading for the last episode and he's there, I think.
Interesting.
So they're obviously all there for the script reading for the whole series or the episodes because it's the scene, if you look at the bit where Kit Harington finds out that he kills Daenerys. It's quite a classic kind of like behind the scenes clip, and you see like Emilia Clarke kind of like doing that, and Kit Harington's like, "What the fuck?" And there's a great, there's a really telling kind of like cutaway shot of Conlith, and he's just like he's sat next to Lena Headey, and he just throws his script on the floor. He's just kind of like sits back, proper a little bit petulant. It's great. It's a great moment.
What I want to talk about on the podcast today is the Vanity Fair story that we were talking about
this morning. So we were just getting ready to come on, and Chris said, "Oh, before we do this episode, read this article." And you sent me a link to a Vanity Fair article, which was like a little bit gossipy, but kind of like based in fact. Do you know what? I've been steeped in Thrones kind of like gossip. Before we get on to it, did you know, or I think I knew, but I'd forgotten. That Bronn and Cersei were never in a scene together.
Yeah, because didn't they used to date?
Because they dated, and apparently ended so badly that she refused to share a soundstage with. And there's a moment, I think, in the scene where...
In season 7.
It's where they bring the White Walker
they all go to the dragon pit.
There's like I think they kind of like had to film it where he had to walk off, didn't he? Like,
they write it. Basically, every single character plus others decide to all go to the Dragon Pit, and Bronn is like, "I'm going to go to a pub."
Yeah. I'll sit outside with a bag of crisps. Yeah.
So this story, this article is in Vanity Fair, and it's from 2018. And it's called Game of Thrones, The Secret of George R.R. Martin's Final Script. And the sort of basis for this is that this episode is the fourth and final episode of Game of Thrones that George R.R. Martin wrote. He used to write one per season. He did the Reigns of Castamere, which we did last week. And he did Blackwater, which we covered in our season 2 recap. He did an episode of season 1 that we didn't recap called The Pointy End. And last time he wrote one. The reason he gave was that actually going forward he had to focus on Winds of Winter, the sixth book, which still hasn't come out. But this article, actually, the original script that he wrote for this episode is on display at the Writers Guild of America Library in Los Angeles. Yeah. So you can like read it. And this reporter went and looked at it and compared it to the episode and just sort of noted that there's quite a lot in his original treatment for this episode that got cut or changed dramatically. And it's really interesting. We won't sort of break it down like line by line, but first of all, his script was 20 pages too long. So they're normally about 50 and he did 70. And yeah. the detail
no, no
is
one
just...
Wants an art, no one wants that, do they?
When no. When the detail is just off the charts. There are things that he says it's really important. For example, the scene where Stannis, Melisandre and Stannis' wife, Selyse, burn the traitors. Very important to establish because Shireen will go on to be burnt alive by Melisandre. Yeah. It was very important to have that in there. But he sort of even writes that you can see all of the traitors' souls ascending to heaven and they look really happy because they've been purged, which is like...
But a lot of the things that he put in, he just wasn't thinking about cost or time. Yeah. I think he wanted Reek to lose some fingers as well, which like all of a sudden just a fucking nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah. There's some concept art of Reek in the fifth book that he looks like 100 years old. Like he has white hair, no teeth. Right. It's like really, really gruesome.
And of course the most famous one is that Tyrion was supposed to have had his nose cut off in the Battle of Blackwater.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of characters in the books, they have like blue mohawks or they have like ringlets in their moustache. And obviously they're just, the team on the show are like, no, we're not doing that. Yeah. Even just the visions that Bran sees, there was quite a lot that George R.R. Martin wanted. For example, like seeing Arya turning into a faceless man, having the wolves play a bit of a bigger part. But we'll link to that story because it's really fascinating to see what
it is
George envisioned being in there. And I think the changes were, some of them were like, we have to streamline this show. We're halfway through. But if we do 8 seasons, we're about halfway through. And there is a sort of sentiment in this story that suggests George wasn't really willing to continue to make their show when it was deviating quite far from what he was able to do in the books.
None of it's been confirmed or anything. But I think the interesting one, the bit for me that was interesting was at the beginning where George genuinely... And I don't know what happened in his life to change, but even at this point in like the end of season 3, George was just like, he said when someone asked them about the TV show overtaking the books, George was like, I'm hopeful that I can not let them catch up with me. And that was at the end of season 3 going into season 4, which is just wild considering we still haven't had the book and we're in 2023 now.
I know.
That we still haven't got that book that he was in the process of like getting on with back then, which was like nearly 15 years ago.
Yeah, well, I remember reading an article that said George R. R. Martin doesn't think he'll have it done in 2014. And this was in 2013. And I was like, God, I'm going to have at least 2 more years.
Yeah, and here we are. I mean, I don't know whether... It'd be interesting to find out, wouldn't it, whether this was a bit of a turning point for everything. You know,
I think you can see changes for the worse being made.
It must be difficult for him. You know, you've got to let the baby go a little bit. You've got to let them fly the nest. But in the same respect, it's so tricky if a story hasn't been finished in your mind. There was that, you know, it references the infamous kind of meeting in the hotel where George kind of maps out and says, you know, what the ending is going to be, but doesn't really say how it's going to get there. It'd be interesting to know how close they were to that in the end. You know,
did he say
well, Varys is going to happen to Varys. Bran's going to be on this. John's going to go there because actually, if that's all it was, if that's all he told them, like the end results, it's quite boring. You know, they were the bits that people complained about. You know, like just John going off to the forest, Brienne writing a book about, you know, Jaime and Cersei getting buried in rubble.
You know. I think my feeling has always been, and we talked about this way back when we did the final season, when we did that for the podcast. I think telling someone the end and not telling them how to get there is the worst way around. I think actually like going, here are some things that happen in the middle and draw your own conclusion, like end it how you want, is sort of makes more sense. Because if you don't know how to get somewhere, it is quite convoluted.
Well, it's like buying something from IKEA with no instructions. You know what it's meant to look like. You've got all the bits there. You've got absolutely no idea how this is supposed to slot into that. Correct.
Yeah, and you don't have any of the tools because they forgot to tell you about those. Anyway, it's really interesting.
It's a brilliant article. Really,
it's just
is.
Fascinating that, you know, he put so much in here that was taken out, and there's things that we'll get to later in the season.
Hey, guess what? We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Let's get onto this episode specifically.
Yeah.
Just before we recorded, you were saying you weren't, it wasn't one of your favorites.
Well, no, I think I remember enjoying it. I think maybe because I've watched this episode more. Maybe it's because I'm now into my tenure of Thronecast, where I'd had to watch every episode like 3 or 4 times anyway. And I remember having watched this a lot. I really enjoyed a lot of it. Maybe I'm just a victim of the rewatch thing, where it just felt like I always find it difficult jumping into a new season and not starting at the beginning. Starting with the first episode. It's like not ending on a finale. It just kind of feels a bit disjointed. So maybe it's that. Maybe it starts with the weird kind of Ramsay kind of dog chase. And I'm pretty sure there's another. Again, I think I'm another Mandela effect kind of thing. I'm sure there's another episode or even a season that begins with a dog chase through the forest. I might be wrong.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the Ramsay stuff, this is where they start to, all of season 3, he's just chopping bits off Theon, and this is where they start to try and do something with him. But I think, I've never been really a fan of what they do with this. This stuff where Ramsay goes to try and kill Jon Snow north of the wall is all made up for the show, and I don't think it's very good particularly. But, this actually is one of my favourite episodes of Game of Thrones.
Cool.
It's not right. The most... like, there's not a lot of fighting. There's not a lot of, like... but I think it's such a subtle episode, and I love the fact that...
Lots of good little conversations, isn't there?
Yeah, that's what I love about it, and I think that's something that, you know, is probably a benefit of the show over the books, right? There's a lot of stuff here that is, like, made for TV, and I think particularly... I think we'd say the same if we watched the... previous episode, because I think it was very similar. There's lots of scene setting and there's lots of characters interacting, and I thought there was such a large amount of that. Even Brienne meeting Cersei, Brienne meeting Joffrey.
Yeah,
I didn't really remember that, or I'd forgotten that, and I just, it's very brief. But it's amazing. It's really great. And I loved Joffrey being like, oh, I like you because you killed Renly. And she's like, no, I didn't. It was a ghost. And he's like, oh, no, you killed him. That's great. Just these things sort of firing that I loved. And I think also what I found when we did our season three episodes, we'd sort of get jumped into like eight storylines. And this has very few compared to the wedding takes the center stage. We have a little bit of time with Theon and Ramsay. We have a very brief bit of time with Bran. And that's it.
Weirdly, on this rewatch, I realised how much I think the Bran Three-Eyed Raven plotline is, I think, probably my favourite in the series, I think. Really? I love it. Yeah, weird. I just love it. Because there's something about prophecies and fate and this is, you know, that I really enjoyed about that. I was, you know, I know Game of Thrones is very political and about scheming and planning and war, and but actually the bit that really appealed to me was the whole Bran thing, because it just felt like it transcended all of that, in the same way that I enjoyed the Night King, because that transcended all of the nonsense as well.
It showed
it made both of those things kind of make a mockery of kind of like what's going on in King's Landing or
infighting, right? It's kind of like there is kind of a higher power and a higher purpose.
Exactly. Maybe it's my higher power speaking
of which, we also obviously also checked in with Stannis Melisandre, which higher power. The thing, I actually agree. I feel like there's not a lot of Bran in the show. And I believe, I think he's not in season five, is he? They sort of, they're like, we don't know what to do with him, so he's just going to stay in that cave for a year, right?
Yeah.
But I watched it and I thought, there was very little of him in this episode, but they got a lot conveyed, which is that he spends a lot of time as his direwolf. And it's sort of like, because if you can't use your legs, of course you want to run around and like, have this heightened sense of smell and eat and all these kind of things. But Jojen and Mira are like, this is not good for your mental state.
Yeah.
There's a lot there. I think it's quite compelling. I think that he, you would do that, wouldn't you? But at the same time, you can get lost in your animal and you can sort of,
it's a bit like the parents telling someone to get off World of Warcraft. You're spending far too long on that game, isn't it?
Bran's in the metaverse, basically.
Your aisles are going square. Exactly. Yeah, he's just hanging out in Club Penguin with fucking Zuckerberg.
Do you know what I also like this episode? I actually really like the stuff with Stannis. I thought it was really weird because, first of all, I don't think he was in any of the season three episodes we talked about.
No. I don't think this is like Joffrey syndrome. We know how important he is, but we're just kind of like, we seem to have sidestepped.
I thought this stuff where they're all having dinner with his wife, Selyse, and then Melisandre, and then like, I wish we'd had that earlier, because I'm like, oh my God, there's so much going on with this family. Like, they're quite weird. Like, they seem to have not got much food in on Dragonstone. The meat's rancid. He's like, we're on an island, go and get some fish. And she's like, oh, you hate fish. It's so like suburban like drama.
Yeah.
And then she's obsessed with Melisandre. He's sort of sleeping with Melisandre. She doesn't seem to care. I just loved all of that. And I thought, God, there's a lot going on.
It's a real begrudging cuckold situation.
It's so weird. And then you've got Shireen, the daughter, who is their only child. They've never been able to have a son. And the child they've got has got this sort of infection, this grayscale. Yeah. So Selyse is already like, oh, she's not very like fond spoiled. Of her daughter.
Yeah.
And there's just so much to it. I thought it was brilliant.
No, you're right. I put in here, I mean, it was our first time we've met Shireen as well, wasn't it? But I just still really feel really sorry for Stannis. You know, I spent a lot of Game of Thrones feeling sorry for him because he is the one. He's the one that we all know should be on the throne.
Yeah,
and also he's just lost. He's lost all his money on crypto. That's what he's done. He's signed up to Andrew Tate's website. He's stuck all his money into crypto. He's fucking put all Shireen's kind of university money into an NFT of a fucking egg.
Yeah,
and now he's realised that until it's too late, he realises he's absolutely fucked it.
And everyone knows he's absolutely fucked it.
Yeah. And talk about, like, you know, Conlith moaning about his exit. We didn't even see Stannis get killed.
I know. He gets a short shrift. I really wanted him to... I think there's a point in season five, after he goes to the north, goes to the wall and is with Jon, I was like, he has got a good claim. I think he can sort of rouse people and he's going to win the Northerners over, and yeah, he doesn't.
It's the most, like, apart from his mentalness with Melisandre, he's the most like Ned.
Yeah, he's very virtuous.
Knows what's right, what's wrong, and yeah, gets, like you say, he gets a rough shot, I think.
Unwilling to bend, you know, and if you put pressure on something and it doesn't bend, it ends up snapping, and it's sort of very similar to the Starks.
What we missed in the opening scene of episode one was Tywin melting down. What was Ned's sword called? Ice.
Ice. No.
Yeah, it was ice, wasn't it? Yeah. Melted it down into Oathkeeper and Widow's Wail. We see Widow's Wail being presented to Joffrey, and Oathkeeper was given to Jaime.
And then he gives it to Brienne.
Now, interesting. I was like, what the fuck happened to Widow's Wail? And this is a really weird kind of, like, it's really weird for Game of Thrones, this is. Because I went and, like, searched for it. I was like, I don't remember what happened to the sword. And it just gets lost in the Red Keep somewhere. It's never really mentioned again.
That's weird.
Which is really rare. Very weird. Because it's such a rare, elaborate, probably extremely valuable sword.
Yeah, well, Tywin says there's only two in the entire city.
Yeah. Sidebar, poised. That was in that Vanity Fair article. That was the most interesting moment for me, was that George R.R. Martin, in his mind, and whether this is something that pans out in the books or not, had Joffrey pinned as the person that gave the cat's paw dagger
to the assassin.
Yeah. And started the whole thing off rather than Littlefinger. And there was a moment in this episode where Tyrion was when Tywin said, oh, there's only two such and such Valyrian steels, Joffrey was supposed to say, oh, I've got some experience in Valyrian steel. And that was the moment where the penny was supposed to drop for Tyrion, where he realises that it was Joffrey that set the whole thing up. And then there was a conversation between them at the wedding table where Tyrion lets him know and Joffrey goes to pieces That would have been, which I think would have been great.
I think it would have been brilliant, yeah. But I think the episode, the wedding feast is a 20-minute kind of uninterrupted bit at the final third of the episode. And it really is like, they work really hard to show how everyone is disappointed, pissed off, alienated by Joffrey just being an absolute, like...
It was like a Knives Out movie.
It was. It was murder mystery. And I thought... Yeah. What's interesting now, we know who's behind it. Mm. They're not shy about it. There's actually a shot where the cup is in the foreground and Olenna is in the background looking at it. And it really does. I really respect them for not hiding it or not trying to do false. What's the word I'm thinking of? Not red flags.
Red herrings.
Red herrings.
Yeah. Well, there was even a phrase by Olenna. She said something like, I think she may have said it to Cersei. There was a good conversation where Larys and Jaime have a chat, then Brienne and Cersei, and there's Olenna, maybe it's with Tywin or something like that. She says, "Oh, let's go and get a glass of wine." She keeps referencing wine, and the signs are all there.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just. I like the way that they frame it, that lots of people could have done something, could have been involved in it. Mm. I like the way that Tyrion, I mean, it's really, he has a lot of reasons to want to poison his nephew.
Yes.
And there's real, I mean, he gets so humiliated. But then you can see why Sansa runs away without even second guessing it. Whether Margaery's involved in it, I don't know. My feeling is that she's actually not, that her grandmother didn't involve her.
Well, I think she's because Margaery had her eye on the prize. Margaery just wants to be queen. So yeah. For Elena to say, by the way, I'm just about to kill him, she'd be like, hang on a minute, what does that mean for me? That completely screws me over.
Also, Marjorie's, I mean, we talked about this in maybe two episodes ago. She's so good with Joffrey. Every time it's about to spill over, she's like, oh, look, the pie is here. Come sit down.
Come to me.
I miss you. And he's like 4 feet away. I thought, God, she's really good at doing that and sort of appealing to his like alpha male or like this sort of, you know, he thinks he's a bit of an alpha.
She was the scariest cast member I ever met.
Really?
Yeah, she just carries this air of, do not talk to me. I'm sure she's lovely. Really?
She was brilliant in this, I thought, because she's sort of both able to look kind of charming and butter wouldn't melt, but also scheming. And I think even watching the show, I was never really sure which one was the act and which one was the facade. And I think she does that so well. You watch this and you could see her orchestrating it. You watch this and you can also see her being completely nothing to do with it. I thought the recreation of the War of the Five Kings with all the small people. The
costumes were great.
Yeah.
The costumes.
Do you see the dragon fire? The guy that has the dragon fire sort of burst out of his chest. It's like green ribbons.
It's so good. It's really good.
And I just loved how vulgar it all was. There was no class to it. Joffrey literally cuts up a history book with a sword.
Yeah.
Because he, you know, just because he can.
Little fact, the band was Sigur Rós.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
The one that he throws the coins at and shoots away, that was Sigur Rós.
Well, I had the captions on. I always do in the morning, just in case there's something being said that I should sort of make note of. And I think the song they are performing is The Reigns of Castamere, which is normally, is like we're about to, like, we just killed loads of people. But I thought, again, if Joffrey wanted that at his wedding...
Just to wind up Sansa a bit.
Just to wind up, yeah. Because the lyrics, the Reigns, their family sigil was a red lion and the Lannisters is gold. And the lyrics are about, like, a cat of red, cat of gold. Each have their claws and it's about, like, you know. So I thought that is so weird to have as a wedding song. Get a bit of Whitney on or something. Or, I don't know, something a bit more romantic.
Yeah, where's the erection selection? Oberyn was great. Pedro Pascal was great in this episode. I forgot how young he looked.
He looks so much younger than he does in The Last of Us, which
I know.
Like,
which I know is the
wasn't
point.
That even, long ago, was it?
No, it's like 10 years ago. He's had a long decade. But I loved his kind of, when he was talking to, Cersei, wasn't he? And he was twisting the knife with her about she's no longer, she's just the queen consort now.
Former queen regent.
it's great.
And they have a really fascinating, in Dawn, you know, they're all just fucking each other. It's like the throuple model of healthy relationships. And so they've all got bastards.
David Hay and Una from The Saturdays. Yeah.
Oh my God, that story is absolutely wild.
It's wild.
I just couldn't, because they're just so like, this is it. Like they're not sort of confirming they're in a throuple, but they're also like, what do you think it looks like? You know, I think it's so funny.
It's weird.
And I thought it was just, there's lots of digs to the Lannisters because clearly Oberyn thinks that Joffrey and all of the kids are born of incest and are technically bastards. And he's saying, bastards are born from passion, aren't they? Like, I think we all know what... obviously, Dawn does get massacred in a literal and figurative sense in season 5. So we'll save most of our chat for that. But Oberyn is a great character. And I think what I love about this episode and what I think I would love to have seen in the previous episode is there's just this sense of, like, the status quo getting mixed up a little bit. Like, lots of new people in town.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, Jaime's back in King's Landing, which is huge. And there was
scene... Yeah, with the Jaime haircut.
Lovely new haircut, had a bit of a shave, and he's got his golden hand. And I loved even just him and Tyrion just having a bit of time together, because they haven't... I mean, have Jaime and Tyrion been together since the pilot?
Probably not. No.
And I think, you know, I've watched this season a few times now, and I love that in the second episode they just go, we're going to kill the big villain. Like, we're going to kill him off. Like, that's really bold. You could see a version where they save this for later in the season.
Yeah.
But I think if I would say if it's something I miss, I would just love a few more episodes in this kind of... King's Landing's changed. There's lots of new people in. There's a few people not there. I would just love a bit more of, like, the impact from the Red Wedding. I'd love to see a bit more of that. It does sort of...
I guess it leans into what they can, what David and Daniel consider to be important milestones in,
yes,
in the thing. You know, they always said, I think it's mentioned in that Vanity Fair article again, that the Red Wedding was something they were building towards from the pilot. It was all, you know, that was the huge, like the end of the first chapter for them. So then you have to look at this and you go, well, is Joffrey dying? It's not really a huge plot point. In terms of the ramifications, you know, Tyrion's trial by combat, you know, it does have a snowball effect. But when you look at actually what they look towards for episode 9, which was John at the, you know, John coming back and the Night's Watch and Ygritte, killing the villain isn't really a shock. It's a crowd pleaser. Whereas actually something like the Hard Home or Battle of the Bastards or Watchers on the Wall has a bit more of an emotional impact and a bit more of a holy shit factor.
Yeah.
Rather than like, yes! Which is, I just remember everyone just cheering. Everyone's so overjoyed at his death. What a great death scene. It was a great death. It was proper. It was overlong. It was brilliantly kind of like gory and gruesome and...
Yeah.
How much of that was CGI was amazing, actually. Like all of the spit and the stuff spilling out of his nose. He had like makeup on. Yeah, it was the eyes. It was so good.
He sort of looks like he's sort of like clotting like his entire body. Like it's so like horrible.
Well, I think that's what it was said to be, wasn't it? It was like it was almost like rattlesnake. Poison where you literally just turned your blood to jelly.
You can sort of congeal, don't you, basically?
Yeah.
But I think what is really clever is even when I knew it was coming, he eats a bit of that pie and you can hear him kind of, oh, I'll wash it down. And so when he's coughing, you're like, oh, I think it's just that really dry food.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, no, it's really well done. And I think an amazing death, amazing sequence.
Knowing what we know, I was watching it going, it was a risky plant of like a poisoned glass of wine because he kind of reached over. There was a moment where he was like got Tyrion to pour the wine and collect this from there. And then all of a sudden just happened to grab one that was vaguely near a Lena. It was very risky, very risky.
Marjorie actually passed it to him, I think is interesting, which does add a bit of credibility to her being aware of it in some way, but I don't know. Like, I don't know.
I have to say, the bits that didn't work for me was it didn't really fit, or the way that it was done to frame Tyrion.
Yeah.
Because he's a clever guy. Everyone knows how clever. He drinks wine and he knows things. That is Tyrion Lannister. And yet, would Tyrion be, like, caught holding the glass, like...
I thought that was a bit naff,
you know. And then the other bit that didn't work, and it's separate to the wedding, was the whole Shay scene. I thought was just shit.
Mm.
It just really didn't work. It didn't fit the characters. It was badly written.
It felt
like it's some kind of weird rom-com, Cyrano de Bergerac style kind of like relationship. It just didn't work because Tyrion would just say, "You're in mortal danger. I fucking love you. Get on the boat, and I'll come and find you."
Why wouldn't he say to you, "My dad is going to kill you"?
Yeah,
like,
and as we know, it's because it led into the betrayal of what really caused Tyrion to kill Tywin.
Yeah.
Was the fact that he discovered that Tywin was shagging Shy.
I think in order for her to testify against him at the trial, they felt the need to have him very forcibly reject her.
Yeah.
But I don't think it made a lot of sense. And I hated how he kept saying, "I won't have children with you because you're a whore. I won't marry you because you're a whore." I was like, you actually are withholding the fact that your dad's going to kill her. And actually, I think what would have been really good is if he had told her.
And she was still so livid about it, yeah.
Yeah, because also, presumably at this point, Is she sleeping with Tywin at this point?
Yeah.
Because actually, if he says, my father's going to kill you, she won't believe that if she's still sleeping, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that would have been quite a good way to sort of offset what she's actually experiencing, which is she's probably quite safe, and she can't tell him that.
Yeah, but it was a really badly written scene. I hate
it. Really didn't like that at all. I think also, I think the way that the show, it does sort of imply that Tyrion is involved, but we know that there's no way that's true. I think also what I'd love to get into more when we do further episodes in this storyline is just like, you know, Tywin and Cersei are obviously not trying to get Tyrion killed. Like, that does not benefit them either. Like, he is still a powerful part of the family. I think Tywin says to him, like, the plan was for you to get sent to the wall. But again, like, that seems so extreme. Like, why don't you just... I don't quite understand. Just
fuck him off to some random house somewhere.
Just give him a different castle, and you still need to... he is still... The whole reason they marry him to Sansa is because they're like, we need to use our name to marry into other families. So the idea that you would send him away...
Yeah,
is just quite confusing to me. So I think, again, they have to sort of have this feeling in this season of like, oh my God, Tyrion, like, everyone's trying to get him. But I still don't quite believe that. And I can't quite remember how they justify it. Or I know Cersei hates him, but like, she mustn't think he's actually poisoned Joffrey.
The Elena thing she actually said to, I think she was talking about the Red Wedding. She was saying it to Sansa or to someone. She just said, killing a man at a wedding, what monster would do such a thing? Which is like,
really good.
Such a great, great moment.
Really good.
Okay, well, there we go. That is it. Hopefully that whet your appetite.
I have an update on where is Sophie Ellis-Bextor.
Oh, okay, so remind the listeners what this is about,
Last week we talked about the fact that Sophie Ellis-Bextor is in the Long Night episode of season 8, right?
Yes, yeah.
And I said, I'm going to just do some digging, and I'm going to try and find out if she was actually in the episode. So someone on Twitter, David Constable.
Hi, David,
if you're listening. He sent me a picture of Sophie Ellis-Bextor in her like armor and everything.
Oh wow, so it's true.
He's like, I found this picture of her, like, you know, behind the scenes. So that's great. Amazing. Confirmation. Cool. She did film it. Now
great,
one extra level is she actually in the episode? Someone said to me, someone whose name I can't remember, apologies, said that her scenes were not in the final edit. So I'm in the process of verifying this at the moment, which is to say I have reached out to her representatives and have asked them to confirm. Yeah. Like, a friend of mine is her day-to-day manager.
I wonder if they got given, like, footage of it. Because...
I know, because you'd want it, wouldn't you?
You'd feel a bit of a twat when you get getting Sophie Ellis-Bextor to rock up, go through costume and wardrobe and makeup, do a bit of acting, and then go, sorry, love, we've canned it. Maybe you'd expect them to at least get, like, a bit of a... You know, maybe David and Danny burnt off a DVD for her.
Yeah. You would want that. It's not enough to get the BTS. You want the actual footage.
No, you need the
footage. Tune in next week. We'll hopefully have an update on where is Sophie Ellis-Bextor.
Exciting. Exciting. Christina Marie Beauty left a comment on YouTube. Said, we do see Game of Thrones go to Castle Rock. This was in... Did we mention that we never saw Castle
Rock? In the final... Yeah, I said I don't think we ever go.
Grey Worm takes the army there, but almost everyone had fled, and then he looks out to see all his ships burning.
It's the same episode where Jaime takes over Highgarden.
Thanks, good Christina.
Good catch, Christina.
Lots of positive response to our Last of Us bonus episode. Thanks very much, gang. Someone asked if we're going to put that up on YouTube. We're not... Because the interview with Craig wasn't videoed, so it would be kind of weird. Hang on a second. Maybe I thought I'd put it up. Hang on a minute. Let me just...
Give the people what they want.
I didn't put it up. I do have it. I think I will put it up, but there's no pictures for Craig's interview, so it'll look a bit weird. But I'll see what I can do.
So I've not seen episode 2 of The Last of Us yet. I'm actually going to watch it today. I'm going to watch
episode 2 or episode 3.
I haven't seen 2 or 3 yet because last week I was just a bit busy with some stuff.
Oh my God. You're telling me I still can't talk to you about episode 3. Oh my goodness.
No, but episode 3 is on in the UK tonight. So we should be talking about it next week anyway.
Yes, we really should. We really should.
So I'll be here next week, a bit of last cast.
Good.
I have heard so many good things about episode 3. I am so excited.
It's just, it gives me goosebumps thinking about it. It's so
the other thing, can I do a little bit of self-promo?
Please do.
My interview with Rupert Grint is out today for GQ. So a couple of weeks ago, I said that I had to interview an actor on my birthday.
Oh, you did, yes.
And it was Rupert Grint, and it's out on GQ's website now.
Amazing.
He is in the new M. Night Shyamalan film, Knock at the Cabin.
What was it like speaking to a wizard on your birthday? Wow, what a treat.
It was great. It was really good. You know,
was he quite open about talking about Potter, or were you told how many questions you could ask about Harry Potter?
No hand holding. I met him in a pub and I spent about 3 hours with him.
I hate meeting extremely famous people in public for work because it just becomes a thing.
Yeah. Well, we went for lunch on the 3rd of January during a rail strike, so the pub was very empty. Because we also got there at like... So actually, I will preface this. We went and did something together. You always do like an activity, usually.
Oh, axe throwing, pottery.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Pottery. Yeah.
I wish we'd done pottery. Now, the activity we did didn't end up going in the piece for various reasons. Nothing salacious, but we did like a sort of meditation thing. And I just realized that sitting in silence for half an hour is not conducive to...
You did. So you did this. Did you actually go through with it? With it?
Yeah. Well, it was. We actually went for a gong bath, which is where someone hits gongs while you close your eyes and breathe. And then I realized we haven't spoken for like 40 minutes because we've been in silence. I thought this isn't going to work. So it just. Anyway, so we met there at this guy's house, and then we went to this pub and we went for a drink and some food at like 12 o'clock. So it was dead in the pub. But there were people there that, you know, they just stare. Like, they're just like...
Just like, holy shit, it's Ron Weasley. Yeah.
But he's so interesting. And he's so... He loves those films. And he loves that part of his life. He's not someone that's, like, embarrassed or trying to move past it. He's sort of spoke a lot about, like, it's always going to be part of my life. And I love it.
Good.
And he just said, you know, he's been getting clocked in public... for like 21 years, 22 years. He's like, this is normal. But I thought it was really interesting. He's doing all these horror projects at the moment. He did a Guillermo del Toro anthology thing on Netflix.
Oh,
he's in this
shit, I need to watch
M. Night Shyamalan film that's out on Friday. And he's in Servant, which is on Apple TV Plus. So he's in a really weird bit of his career, which I think is good. He sort of didn't know what he wanted to do and he's now doing that. But very frank about what it's like being... that famous. He sounds like he's got a really wonderful life. Like he does beekeeping. He makes ceramics. He draws.
I do beekeeping. Chris, I'm in the middle of a beekeeping course. I'm 5 weeks into a course to become an official beekeeper.
Are you really?
Yeah,
are you going to have loads of hives and stuff?
Yeah.
Hives, is that what you get on week four, that tattoo?
Those who don't know, I live in a Teletubby house and I'm putting hives on the roof.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is very cool. Well, he's been doing it. Yeah, he's been doing it for a minute, and he loves it. Cool. But he's quite scared. Bees are quite scary.
Nah, just smoke.
Did you know when they sting you, they don't know that it's going to kill them when they pull their stinger out. But it's sort of connected to their spine, and it sort of rips a bit of their spine out.
You think that by now they can communicate so well. Bees can, like the way that they tell you. They tell each other where the food is and the waggle dance that they do and stuff. Like, you'd think they'd have worked out a way. It's like, shit, I just saw John sting that bloke and he died. Don't sting them.
Yeah, his spine's missing.
Yeah.
Anyway, but the other thing is I heard, not through any like official channels, but there's strong chatter about Warner Brothers doing a TV adaptation of Harry Potter. 7 seasons, 1 season per book. And they would recast everyone. So we talked about that a lot in the interview where he said that might be the thing that helps him finally move on is someone else being Ron. Very interesting. Anyway, thank you for letting me plug that.
Next week, we will be talking about season 4. We've already done episode 2, already into episode 8 of season four.
We're missing out the whole middle of season, aren't we?
Which feels crazy, but you guys are the boss. You guys are the boss. Wow. So it's the Mountain and the Viper next week, which, I mean, it doesn't get any fucking better than that. It really doesn't.
It's going to be amazing.
It's going to be great. Until then, Dracarys.
Dracarys.
If you'd like to get involved in the podcast, just head over to Twitter at @DragonCast_pod or email DragonCast@DaffDoris.com and leave us your Easter eggs, predictions and thoughts on the show. You can also watch this episode over on our YouTube channel. Just search for DragonCast Jamie East. Any support, whether it's a follow, a share, a mention to your friend on the bus or a tattoo on your backside, is very much appreciated. DragonCast is hosted by me, Jamie East, along with Chris Mandel, and is a Daff Doris production. Dracarys.